is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Connolly, Judge Smith, the Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Court of Appeals WebEx hearing. Today is September 9th, 2020. We have one last case on our oral argument calendar. Counsel, the rules for appellate procedure remain the same, even though we're conducting this hearing in Zoom fashion. Please indicate your name and state which party you speak on behalf of before beginning your argument. Our marshal will also have a time clock that will appear on screen showing you that you have 15 minutes and what the countdown is for presentation of your case. Mr. Cohen as appellant counsel, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. If everyone's ready to go, we'll turn to you, Mr. Cohen. And a reminder, if you're not speaking, please mute yourself.
And Your Honor, with apologies, before we start, where's the clock going to be?
It's where the marshal square is right now. There he is. He said, yeah. That's the marshal. He's in a different location, but he will put up the time clock.
Okay, fine. I apologize for these questions. This is a little bit different.
It's new to everyone, Mr. Cohen. So, you know, welcome to the club.
Yeah, for the next year and a half or so.
When you're ready to go, just begin speaking and the time clock will appear.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Your Honor, and members of the court. I'm Richard Cohen, attorney for appellant Sweezy, and appreciate the opportunity to present this to you. Members of the court, what I'd like to say at the outset, as indicated in my brief, is that the trial court in this case, from the outset, got this matter incorrectly. The two principal cases relative to whether or not this is something that should be presented to a jury, the question of fact to a jury in the case of ministerial or discretionary immunity, is that the issue of fact needs to be presented to the jury. The two cases which the trial court presented in its memorandum relative to the order for summary judgment were both the Gleason case and the Snyder case. Neither case deals with the issue at the heart of this appeal. In the case of Snyder, this was a property issue relative to the city of Minneapolis, and it dealt principally with the issue of valuation. The only item I can find relative to the issue we have right now is on page 786, where the court talked about where acts of a city are discretionary is a legal question. Nothing about the facts. The Gleason case dealt with more of a tort claim, but it never mentioned the issue of a malicious or willful conduct. It only talked about discretionary versus ministerial. And again, what's at the heart of this is that we have conduct by the defendant, Officer Ramirez, that would suggest that the matter needs to be presented to a jury for determination of whether or not that conduct is malicious or willful. And I will suggest, if I might, that—
Well, is that because, Mr. Cohen, you think there are material facts in dispute? Or, well, let me stop there. Is that because you believe there are material facts in dispute?
You know, that's correct. And I'd like to address that in a minute. I just wanna make sure I go through the case law relative to this is a matter for a jury to decide, and I'd like to address the fact issues, if I might. In my brief, I cite the case of Jones versus Hennepin County, which I think is the strongest case. It's also a case that was determined after the Vassalo case, which is the case from 2014, the Minnesota Supreme Court case, that talks about the question of discretionary immunity and suggests that a lot of police chases would be discretionary. But in the Jones case, they talk about willful and malicious wrong against Jones, and it says—
Mr. Cohen?
Yes.
If you're not facing directly your microphone, we're having difficulty hearing you.
I'm sorry.
Or talk louder.
All right, sorry for the faux pas with Zooms. I've done a lot of them, but I think I've made a mistake before. So what the court said is because the determination of malicious or willful conduct is generally a question of fact for the jury, the district court did not err in submitting the second question to the jury. And then again, to the question of immunity, and that was submitted to the jury incorrectly because they submitted the question of ministerial or discretionary immunity to the jury. That is a question of law. I would also, again, look at the brief, the Johnson case. It says whether or not an officer acted maliciously or willfully is usually a question of fact to be resolved by the jury. The Ellison case, usually a question of fact to be resolved by the jury. The Holmes case, which is a...
But I mean, isn't the problem is usually it does not mean always?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, it doesn't...
I said the problem with that is usually, I mean, if the Jones case said always, then I think this would be a different case, but usually is not always. So then it seems to me, well, then it seems to me be different. And I'm not so sure then it's a clearly erroneous application of the law.
Well, let me, if I might then, having laid the predicate that usually malicious or willful conduct is to be determined by the jury, let me lay the predicate then relative to when you would allow that. And again, the case law, I think, is replete in looking at some of those arguments in terms of even separate from the facts, where I think the respondent's brief talked about, the respondent's brief talked about metaphysical. One of the cases says that there must be, you can't deal with metaphysical kind of evidence. I couldn't find anything in case law that defined metaphysical. I looked pretty extensively. So in my reply brief, I quote from Merriam's Collegiate Dictionary, metaphysical is, quote, of or relating to the transcendent or to a reality beyond what is perceptible to the senses and highly abstract or abstruse. We have facts here that I'll suggest are significantly different. If we look at Vassalo, it dealt with a police chase or a police call where it was snowing. The police officer couldn't see other vehicles. Police officer was going 54 miles an hour upon entry into the intersection and crashed into the other vehicle. In this case, we have some significant differences, even relative to the chase, where the police officer is going 100 miles an hour, going in and out of traffic, sees other vehicles, doesn't see the plaintiff, the appellant's vehicle, but sees a couple of other vehicles. It's clear weather. But even more than that, we have a couple of other issues that distinguish this from other situations. One is the use of the radios. There's extensive deposition testimony relative to...
Well, you know, not to be difficult, but mm-hmm. I listened to the radio on the way to work this morning in the car. So was I acting willfully and maliciously if I got into an accident by going 40 miles an hour when in Minneapolis it's supposed to be 20 and went through the red light and crashed into the other car because I didn't see it either? Would that be willful or malicious, or would that just be negligent?
Well, Your Honor, obviously you weren't on some kind of a police chase when you were doing that. So let me offer the distinction, though, because there was extensive testimony, deposition testimony, about the use of the two-way police band radio. Coupled with that, Officer Ramirez was also switching radio stations on the AM-FM radio station for different music stations at the same time. He's going 100 miles an hour, weaving in and out of traffic. You know, that's...
Mr. Cohen, aren't all those facts, that isn't relative to the crash that happened with Ms. Sweeney. The facts that are relative to the collision are simply that he failed to see your vehicle until the last second. I mean, he may have been reprimanded for whatever happened prior to that, but isn't that separate and apart from the facts of the collision?
Your Honor, I would suggest not, because again, the speed was excessive for the reasons articulated by Officer Ramirez. However,
if there hadn't been a crash, the fact that he was speeding is exactly what he should do because he's responding to an emergency call. So if you disregard that conduct because it didn't have anything to do with the crash, speed wasn't the crash. He did not see her vehicle because of, I believe somebody called it a small vehicle, tiny vehicle, And also because of the way the curve was indicated, he just plain didn't see her.
But Your Honor, I would suggest that his conduct and behavior leading up to the crash was such.
Did you argue that his conduct in going around the corner when he got to the corner, did you argue any malicious aspect of that?
Well, Your Honor, that's why this is a matter that needs to be determined by a jury as to whether or not the conduct leading up to this was malicious or willful. That's exactly the point, Your Honor.
But that's the exception to the immunity if, in fact, his actions were malicious or willful.
And needs to be determined by the jury. That's the case law.
Is there counsel, if I might ask, is there, what does the record tell us about the parts of the conduct that you are talking about, specifically about the radio and fiddling with changing music, et cetera? When did that happen relative to the crash?
That's, at least based upon deposition testimony, that's somewhat indeterminate. And again, that's why that needs to be presented to a jury. I will indicate that in the that if I can find it, Officer Ramirez was asked about the music. Do you think it serves in any way as a distraction? And he answered, quote, "Not to me, sir, no." So that makes the very point, not to me. So his judgment was, it didn't make any difference to him, but the strong inference is it could have made a difference to somebody else. So Officer Ramirez himself has suggested the distinction relative to his conduct. Additionally, if I can go back to the Vassalo case hinges on the fact that the conduct of Sheriff Majeski was directly in point with the Hennepin County Sheriff Office's regulatory scheme for such incidents. In this case, Officer Ramirez received a reprimand. So his conduct was clearly not in line with what he should have been doing. And that's why we have behavior that goes beyond what would normally be the case and should be, again, presented to a jury.
So let me, counsel, if I might ask you this, and it'll be a question I have also for counsel for respondent, is apropos of what the jury is supposed to decide, let's assume a factual situation that you would think applies to this, no doubt, but let's even make it worse. Let's say, you know, it's 150 miles per hour, approaching a light seemed to be red. He's permitted to drive without a siren and to exceed speed, you know, to exceed the speed limit. But it's so reckless that it would clearly put the public in safety and welfare at risk, you know, and at the moment entered was changing the radio station, saw it's a red light, saw it's a curve and still zooms through at 150 miles per hour. And let's say those facts are all undisputed. I assume it would be your argument, but this is what I'm trying to figure out from the case authority, that even though those material facts are undisputed, that still the jury gets to decide whether it's reasonable or not. In other words, the fact question is the reasonableness of it, not the actual facts around what the conduct was. That's what I want to try and understand about this fact question for the jury, because juries certainly do decide reasonableness in other types of contexts. And is reasonableness a fact question, even though what is done is not in dispute?
But, Your Honor, if I can quote a case that I cite, the Tyler case, where the Supreme Court said that this 2008 case, a genuine issue of fact exists when the evidence permits, quote, reasonable persons draw different conclusions. So could somebody draw a different conclusion that Officer Ramirez's utilization of the radio switching back and forth between AM and FM as he's driving 100 miles an hour, weaving in and out of traffic, would not be reasonable and would arguably be malicious or willful? Again, a question of subjectivity for the jury to determine. And that's why I would like to suggest that if we allow this behavior to stand, and Judge Smith, I think your point's well taken to the extent is, where do you draw the line? If you look at the host of cases that deal with police chases of this sort, they're dealing with relative rate of speed, did they see traffic and so on. Here we have some additional facts that are very unique and unusual that have not been determined before by a jury. I'll take your analogy one step further. What about an officer who gets into a car totally drunk and then takes off on a chase? Would we assume that person is acting in a malicious or willful way? That's a very an even more extreme situation than what you present.
Well, in that case, I would. I think Judge Smith hit it on the line. I mean, the Vassallo case says, in order to find malice, the court must find that the wrongful act so unreasonably put at risk the safety and welfare of others that as a matter of law, it could not be excused or justified. And I would argue in that case, and you know, maybe even the 150 mile an hour case, that's acting willfully and maliciously because it's so unreasonable. So I guess in order for us to reverse, Mr. Cohen, could you point to the facts that are so unreasonable that the officer put the risk and safety and welfare of the public so that as a matter of law, it cannot be excused or justified? But what should we be focusing on?
Well, I would suggest on that continuum, an excessive rate of speed of 100 miles an hour. You won't find that with other cases. Second,
now, where do you get that? I thought he was going, I thought he testified it was 70 and the machine said 60 to 65. Where does 100?
Upon impact, but he was braking as he entered the intersection when he finally did see the car. But he was traveling, the deposition testimony indicates he was going about 100 miles an hour as he's proceeding to the intersection. Now, he slams on the brakes as he gets to that intersection. Then the speed declines to 75, and then I believe it's like 65 miles an hour. So
Mr.
it's a much faster.
I just want to remind you that your time has expired, but you can wrap up your thought.
Well, the thought is simply this. If we allow this to stand, then it's open for anything. Then you would have to find, as Judge Connolly has suggested, very extreme behavior, just extreme behavior. And that's why I think the case law makes it very clear that this is a question of fact to be determined by a jury. The case law is replete in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. And you will have rebuttal time. Turning then to respondent counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Evan Tsai. I represent the respondents, the City of Blaine, and Officer Joseph Ramirez of the police, Blaine Police Department. Members of the court, the matter at bar is a textbook law enforcement official immunity case. The appellant is challenging the district court's order, finding that there is no genuine issue of material fact, and granting summary judgment in favor of the city and Officer Ramirez. Neither party is disputing that the officer was exercising his discretion. And the district court properly determined that the officer acted without any willfulness or maliciousness in the execution of his discretionary duties, where Officer Ramirez was driving in emergency response mode while responding to an emergency call of a suicidal woman threatening to jump off a bridge into highway traffic. The district court properly determined that Officer Ramirez is entitled to official immunity, and the city vicariously is also entitled. Officer Ramirez was.
Can you help me with? Let's go through a couple scenarios. So one is Judge it was your opposing counsel, like posited the idea of someone driving drunk. Okay, that's clearly prohibited. Let's say the officer rather was driving drunk at excessive speeds. You know, it's just like wildly violating laws in the pursuit. And the facts are not disputed. Would that question be as a matter of law, a district court would decide it was malicious, or would that just send it to a jury to decide the willful and maliciousness? And I'm assuming that there was a violation even of law.
Assuming there is a violation of law, the court would not grant summary judgment and send the matter to a jury.
So it would go to a jury. So a court wouldn't decide as a matter of law. The court would still decide, even though it's facially, it's impossible almost to imagine anything other than unreasonableness. It still goes to a jury to decide that.
Judge, the point of summary judgment in that that hypothetical is a judge saying, well, we see here that the undisputed facts tell us that the officer is not entitled to official immunity because the officer had acted willfully and maliciously in driving drunk, violating the law, and of course, needless to say, department policy.
So malice and willfulness, you're saying, would be decided as a matter of law by the court on summary judgment?
With respect to official immunity, yes, Your Honor. And then the case proceeds.
There would be no jury. There'd be no jury question on malice.
That's correct. And it's interesting that you asked that question, because in the Jones matter, that matter was already put to a jury, and one of the instructions that the judge had given to the jury was, you have to determine whether there was willfulness or maliciousness. And in that matter, that unpublished decision, I might add, the appellate court was required to determine whether or not that jury instruction was necessary. The appellant had argued after losing that willfulness and maliciousness is a matter of law. And that might be the case had the appellant made a summary or had the respondent made a summary judgment motion, but that didn't happen. That went straight to jury.
So let's assume a situation like I also asked about then, where it's not a violation of law that we can pinpoint, unless you get to just such reckless driving, I guess, but you're going 150 miles an hour, the officer is, into a blind intersection against a red light, et cetera. Those are undisputed facts. Does a jury not have a role in deciding whether that is unreasonably putting the public at risk?
If the court at summary judgment finds that there is a genuine issue of material fact, that then the matter can go to a jury. But
that's my question. What is the material fact at issue? The conduct is undisputed. Is it the reasonableness of the conduct that the jury has the that should rightfully go to a jury to decide whether that was unreasonable in those circumstances? Why doesn't a jury get to decide unreasonableness in that context?
Because unreasonableness is not the standard when we apply the, unreasonableness is not the standard when it comes to official immunity, Your Honor.
It's not the standard of whether you unreasonably put the safety and welfare of others at risk?
No.
By reckless driving?
It is whether an officer had knowingly violated a policy or the law in his or her execution of discretionary, in the execution of their discretionary duty. Now, in each case that appellant cites, Vassallo v. Majeski, for instance, the court there found that there was no violation of a duty, ministerial or discretionary, even as the officer had exhibited some pretty egregious conduct.
Reckless driving can't be a violation of a duty? I'm assuming super reckless driving. You might disagree with this at the 100 down to 65, et cetera. But if we posit really reckless driving that's undisputed, you're saying
that's correct, Your Honor. Even really reckless driving, if it does not violate any kind of established department policy or any established law, and the officer was not breaking any of those things, the officer is entitled to official immunity. Now,
does the policy here not require due regard for safety? Was there no policy?
The policy requires that a person exercise as much caution as they are able. And in this matter, that's undisputed. The officer was certainly driving as quickly as he can. He was operating a police band radio because he was discussing with his colleagues how to address the emergency call. And yeah, he listened to the radio.
Why do you say it's undisputed that it was due regard or whatever, caution, as much caution as necessary? I mean, isn't that a determination that a jury could make that was or was not due regard in the circumstances, even if the facts are undisputed?
The standard here is not if the officer was acting reasonably. The question is whether the officer is entitled to official immunity.
And well, I'm using the policy language that you were citing too. You said if it's a violation of policy, and I asked, is there a policy? You said yes, and then described it. That's what I'm getting to.
Right. And I Let me supplement my answer, Your Honor, by saying that the willfulness or maliciousness standard requires that the officer is violating policy or doing something that is prohibited by policy or by statute and is doing it knowingly. Now, the policy at question, we have two things that the district court looked at. The district court looked at Minnesota Statute Section 169.03 sub 5, I believe, and of course, Blaine Department policy. And Blaine Department policy said, if I may quote it, that Blaine officers responding to emergency calls as an emergency vehicle are required to operate both sirens and emergency lighting system unless significant tactical reasons exist justifying the sole use of either the siren or the emergency lighting system. This provision does not relieve the officers driving an authorized emergency vehicle from the duty to drive with due regard of persons using the street, nor does it protect the officer from the consequences of reckless disregard. That said, that is a discretionary duty that the officer has. So they have to exercise as much due care as they're able. Here, the officer went into an intersection traveling at emergency speeds, and he was communicating with his colleagues and he was listening to music. The court said that there is no material or genuine issue of material fact there. He is still covered by official immunity because he was exercising his discretion in trying to save a life, in trying to prevent other people from getting hurt from the person who threatened to jump off a bridge into oncoming traffic.
Mr. Tsai, what are we to make of the reprimand? I mean, there was no reprimand in Vassallo.
So true.
How does that play in the discussion as to whether he was acting in a willful and malicious manner?
The reprimand is simply something that the court can consider and did consider, but the reprimand is essentially the superior officer saying, I wouldn't have done it that way. I question whether or not the reprimand is even admissible at trial, but barring those things, the district court had properly considered that reprimand in deciding that officer Ramirez and the city were entitled to official immunity. And
can you give a few minutes sentences more to that? What does it mean to properly consider it? In which way should it be considered? And how did the district court consider it?
Well, the district court considered, the district court had to answer a few questions, some of which were agreed to by both parties and some of which were contested. Certainly, the question existed as to whether official immunity was applicable to the respondents. And whether the officer was acting in a discretionary capacity or a ministerial capacity. The respondents and the appellants agree on that. And then, of course, last but certainly not least, the question of willfulness or maliciousness.
Okay, and what does the reprimand tell us about that question?
The reprimand tells us that a superior officer would have done things differently. But it doesn't say that the superior officer had, or that Officer Ramirez had violated department policy or broken the law.
Well, it says he was at, it said he failed to exercise due regard for the safety of others. I mean, doesn't that sound sort of willful?
It doesn't though.
I don't know.
They have the luxury of hindsight in that regard, but the thing about discretionary duty is that we have to rely upon an officer's judgment at the time things happened. Like, it's official immunity is there so that courts and the legislature do not second guess the officer in making a discretionary call. Can we say that it's willful or can we say that it's reckless? I suppose, but that's not what the standard is.
What if the reprimand said he failed to exercise due regard for the safety of others and therefore put others unreasonably at risk? Is that acting willfully and malicious?
I don't think so, Your Honor. There has to be a department policy and a law that is knowingly violated. And I don't think the record yields that Officer Ramirez had willfully and maliciously violated something that was prohibited by law and policy. That's what the records.
Following up on Judge, so I assume then if it wasn't a police chase and he was going 150 miles an hour and aimed at someone, that would be willful and killed them. That's acting, and you know, might as well, no, let's not throw in the drunk driving thing, but just did that, that's willful and malicious, right?
Well, that's assault in the second degree. That's a violation of the law, absolutely.
So does it have to be, are you saying, Mr. Tsai, it has to be a violation of the law in order to be willful and malicious?
That's what the case law says. The case law requires that the officer engage in conduct that is prohibited by the law. That is prohibited
reckless
by
driving
department.
Prohibited by the law? Reckless driving? What if he's, you know, like looking at his, I mean, I won't say texting because that's a, but you know, if you're just reckless, you close your eyes for 10 seconds out of a thrill or something, you know?
Well, and that, and therein lies the distinction, Judge, is when you say that, a person is joyriding or driving for thrills and kicks and is engaging in reckless conduct, then yeah, that would be a violation of the law. But
can
that's not
the case.
Can it be
reckless for a person to be driving 100 miles an hour and fiddling with their radio and looking down at that and not watching the road?
Well, so it might be negligence, but again, the standard is willful and malicious conduct that is necessary.
Right. I asked if it could be reckless driving for a person to do that. If I'm driving home, right? I mean, if I had the authority to drive at 100 miles an hour and I was looking down at my radio.
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you that at least with respect to Chapter 169, there's nothing that specifically prohibits officers from doing what they must in the course of their duties, whether it be fiddling with a police band radio, or there's nothing that prohibits officers from listening to music while they're on an emergency call. But I can tell you that in Chapter 169, officers are given the authority to drive at speeds in excess of the posted speed limit because they're responding to an emergency.
I guess my concern is this just seems, it seems to move around the argument in the case law and maybe in what we're seeing. We go from it must be a violation of law to, well, it could be a violation of policy. But then if the policy requires non-reckless driving, then that converts it back into a discretionary question. There's something slippery about these arguments that I'm having trouble trying to pinpoint what the actual standard is and who gets to decide it. And I mean, it might be the case law, it might be these circumstances, but it didn't seem like other cases like Vassallo or Vassallo had a reckless, I know you're out of time, but it had a reckless driving situation. It seemed to approve the driving, you know, and the driving looked a little different from here, at least as the facts that we have on summary judgment.
And Your Honor, I can understand the court's concern, but we're not in a position to condone behavior. We're simply in a position to determine whether an officer is entitled to official immunity, and in that determination, finding whether an officer is acting in such a willful or malicious manner, like if I may adopt criminal law parlance, in a specific intent manner, to do a thing that is prohibited. So, I see that I'm out of time. Again, I urge the court to affirm the district court ruling and find that official immunity is applicable to my clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tsai. And as indicated, Mr. Cohen, you have the last word.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. We're forgetting one very important thing relative to the conduct. He wasn't simply just listening to music. He was flipping the radio stations, listening to music, listening to the police band at the same time. I don't want to spend too much of my 5 minutes talking about my musical taste in the car.
But there wasn't any testimony that he did that when he entered the intersection, was there?
No, but he was doing that as he was driving to the intersection, going 100 miles an hour. And we've had a lot of discussion in the state about distracted driving. I found when I got my new vehicle with XM stereo with lots of stations, early on, I found myself flipping stations. And I realized this isn't very safe. And I quit doing it. And that's exactly what he was doing at that time. That's a very important fact to mention. We've talked about the reprimand and the fact that the reprimand in this case
distinguishes this particular case, the Sweezy case, from all the other case law that I can find that deals with reprimands. Counsel also wants to have it, I'll suggest with all due respect, a little bit of both ways. You can't say that there's gonna be an ironclad one size fits all, but then say, well, do we have a jury at any time? And that's why I suggest again, we'll emphasize the case law is replete that the malicious or willful conduct is to be determined by a jury. Let me just make a couple of comments relative to this question of a genuine issue of fact or what kind of evidence you would need. The Holm case says you only need to suggest willful or malicious conduct. The Freiler case, which I also cite, says that reasonable persons could reach different conclusions. That would allow a case to be sent to a jury. The McDonough case talks about mere allegations are not enough. Well, we don't have simply allegations. We have actual facts. And those are the kinds of situations which make it very clear, again, the case law is replete, that malicious or willful conduct must be determined by a jury where it's not just metaphysical. And again, I gave the quote of metaphysical from Webster's. Again, there's no case law definition of metaphysical. That suggests that we're not dealing with the position of the appellant is not metaphysical. There's very explicit evidence that led to what happened in this particular crash. And again, would also emphasize the fact that we do have a reprimand that says explicitly that
the officer— Let me ask you, Mr. Cohen, if there was no reprimand, let's just say there was no reprimand, are you saying then the same facts would justify that his actions were willful and malicious?
Your Honor, that's a difficult question to answer because we don't have that. I do believe it's a combination of the behavior relative to how he was handling the driving. The distinction, again, relative to the use of radio, which there's no parallel for in the case law with such cases, coupled with the reprimand, where there's no parallel in case law.
Well, on that note, is Mr. Tsai correct? Let's say the judge denied summary judgment, this matter went to trial. Would you have been able to put this reprimand into evidence before the jury? And if so, under what rule of evidence or case law?
I don't have the case law. I believe it would be admissible in the way that it was admissible in other similar cases where the reprimand was part of the trial record. And that was from the case with Vassalo. The reprimand or the lack thereof was part of the trial record. If you can do it in one way, you can do it in the other. So I do think that based upon the Vassalo case, it's admissible to show that in this case, Officer Ramirez was driving in a way that did not show due safety for others. And again, I will emphasize that if you look at the train of these of the case law relative to these police, what I call police chases, you will not find, I believe, any other case where there was a reprimand issued, as is the situation here. And you'll find no other case that will cite some of the facts that I've cited. And I think that allows the distinction to take it out of the realm of no genuine issue of fact. And that being the case, it absolutely is something that has to be determined by a jury. Would also just want to make clear, I'm not suggesting that the overall situation would not be subject to discretionary immunity. That's a matter of law, and that's clear. And I'm not arguing to the contrary. What I'm arguing to the contrary is that this is a matter that should have been given to a jury for determination. And the trial court judge, as the basis for her order, cites two cases that really don't deal with that whatsoever.
Mr. Cohen, your time has also expired. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both attorneys for appearing today in support of your argument. The matters are submitted and a decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe. This court will now stand in recess to address other matters that are being submitted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.